Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antyalila, chapter 13, text 93. Ashtaprahar Ram Nam Japena Ratridine Sarvatyaji Chalila Jagannatha Darshani. Ramdas had renounced everything and was going to see Lord Jagannath. While traveling, he chanted the holy name of Lord Ram 24 hours a day. Raghunatha Bhatter Shane Patete Milila Bhatter Jali Mate Kori Vahiya Chalila Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayhyam Dathati Shupadantikam Bande hang Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalang Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raghunathan Vitamstam Sajivam Shadvaitam Savatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Shahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamstra Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kolpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyevacha Patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Raghunath Bhatt was the son of Tapan Mishra. And he left everything aside, all other duties, to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He must have been coming from Varanasi, it seems here, to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And along the way, he meets this Ramdas Vishwas, who accompanied him, and he's described here, he took Raghunath's baggage on his head and carried it. Nana Sheva Kori Kore Pada Sambahan Tate Raghunathir Hoy Sankuchita Mon. Ramdas served Raghunath Bhatt in various ways, even massaging his legs. Raghunath Bhatt felt some hesitation in accepting all this service. Tumi Bharalok Pandit Mahabhagavate Shevana Kuriho Shuke Cholmor Shate. You are a respectable gentleman, a learned scholar, and a great devotee. Please do not try to serve me. Just come with me in a happy mood. The Ramdas was the teacher of a famous book known as Kavya Prakash, so he was a great scholar, and Raghunath Bhatt was hesitating to accept service from him. Just come with me in a happy mood. Ramdas kohe, ami shudra adham, brahmanera sheva e mora nijadharma. Ramdas replied, I am a shudra, a fallen soul, to serve a brahmana is my duty and my religious principle. Shankocha na koratumi ami tomar dash, tomar seva korila hoy hridaye ullas. Therefore, please do not be hesitant. I am your servant, and when I serve you, my heart becomes jubilant. Eta boli jhali vahin, korein shetman shevane, ragunater tarak mantra japen ratvidine. Thus, Ram Das carried the baggage of Raghunath Bhatta and served him sincerely. He constantly chanted the holy name of Lord Ramchandra day and night. E mate Raghunath aila nila chale, prabhur charane ya milila kutuhale. Traveling in this way, Raghunath Bhatt soon arrived at Jagannath Puri. There, with great delight, he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and fell at his lotus feet. Danda padanam kori bhatta parila charane prabhu raghunatha jani koilo alingane. Raghunath Bhatta fell straight as a rod at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then the Lord embraced him, knowing well who he was. I've skipped whichever this is. Okay, we've skipped it. Mishra ar shekharir dandavat janaila Mahaprabhu tatsavar varta puchila. Raghunath offered respectful obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on behalf of Tapan Mishra and Chandrashekhar, and the Lord also inquired about them. Bhalo haila aila deka kamala lochan aji amar eta koriba prasad bhojan. It's very good that you've come here, the Lord said. Now go see the lotus-eyed Lord Jagannath. Today you will accept prasad here at my place. Govindere kohi eka vasha deoyaila sarupadi bhaktagon shame milaila. The Lord asked Govinda to arrange for Raghunath Bhatta's accommodations and then introduced him to all the devotees, headed by Swarup Damodar Goswami. E mata prabhu shange rahila ashtamash dine dine prabhur kripai barai ullas. Thus, Raghunath Bhatta lived with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continuously for 8 months. And by the Lord's mercy, he felt increased transcendental happiness every day. Madhye Madhye Mahaprabhur Korein Nirmantran Ghar Bhatta Korein Ar Vivita Vyanjan. He would periodically cook rice with various vegetables and invite Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home. Raghunatha Bhatta Pake Ati Sunipun Je Randhe She Hoy Amritarasham. Raghunath Bhatt was an expert cook. Whatever he prepared tasted just like nectar. A devotee is expert, so Raghunath Bhatt was noted for this particular item of expertise, that he was a very good cook, and whatever he made was nectarian. Parama Shantoshe Prabhu Korein Bhojan Prabhur Avashishta Patra Patter Bhaktashan. Bhatter Bhakshan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would accept with great satisfaction all the food he prepared. After the Lord was satisfied, Raghunath Bhatt would eat his remnants. Ramdas Yadi Pratam Prabhure Milila Mahaprabhu Adhiktare Kripa Na Kurila. When Ramdas Vishwas met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Lord did not show him any special mercy, although this was their first meeting. Antare mumukshuteho vidya gurvan sarva chitta gyata prabhu sarva gya bhagavan. Within his heart, Ram Dass Vishwas was an impersonalist who desired to merge into the existence of the Lord, and he was very proud of his learning. Being the omniscient Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can understand the heart of everyone, and thus he knew all these things. So it's at first surprising. Ram Dass was chanting the holy name of the Lord 24 hours a day, and he was rendering such humble and menial service to a dear devotee of the Lord, Raghunath Bhatt, and expressing such nice devotional sentiments and rendering all sorts of services. And yet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ignored him. He gave all sorts of attention to Raghunath Bhatta, and totally ignored this Ram Dass, who'd come with Raghunath Bhatta and served him all along the way. So here the explanation is given by Kaviraj Goswami that although externally Ram Dass was chanting the holy name and doing Vaishnav Seva, his purpose was to merge with the Supreme. This is a certain kind of devotional mentality, that we devote ourselves to Krishna or Ram or Nrisimha or some form of the Lord with the ulterior motive of merging with the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mama janmani janmani shure bhavatad bhaktoi bhavatad bhaktir hoitaki toi. I have no motive. I just want to serve you life after life. I just want to serve you eternally. But Ram Dass had a different motive. I just want to serve you until I can become one with you. I just want to engage in your devotional service so that I can become one by merging into your existence. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew this, and he knew also that this Ram Dass, although coming on, we would say, in a very humble way, was actually very proud of being a great scholar. Vidya Gauravan, he was proud of his education, proud of his learning. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't show him any special mercy, Sarvagya Bhagavan, as the Antaryami, the super soul in everyone's heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew it and just gave him no attention. Yayata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As we approach the Lord reciprocates. So the Lord knew the inner intention. Bhavagrahi Janardana, he knows Bhavagrahi Janardana. He knows the feeling of the worshipper. And so he knew what kind of ideas this, what kind of feeling this Ram Dass had, and reciprocated accordingly. Didn't give him any attention. Ram Dass Koila Tabe Nila Chale Vash Patta Nayak Goshtike Pardai Kavya Prakash. Ram Dass Vishwas then took up residence in Jagannath Puri and taught the Kavya Prakash to the Pattanayak family, the descendants of Bhavananda Roy. Ashtamash Rahi Prabhu Bhatte Vidai Dila Vivaha Na Koriha Boli, Nishedha Korila. After 8 months, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bade farewell to Raghunath Bhatta, the Lord flatly forbade him to marry. Do not marry, the Lord said, Vivaha na kuriha, don't do it. Purport. Raghunath Pattacharya had become a greatly advanced devotee while still unmarried. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could see this, and therefore he advised him not to begin the process of material sense gratification. Marriage is a concession for people who are unable to control their senses. Raghunath, however, being an advanced devotee of Krishna, naturally had no desire for sense gratification. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised him not to enter the bondage of marriage. Generally, a person cannot make much advancement in spiritual consciousness if he is married. He becomes attached to his family and is prone to sense gratification. Thus, his spiritual advancement is very slow or almost nil. Well, we have hardly a ringing endorsement for family life here. Sometimes historical revisionists give us the idea that unfavorable attitudes toward family life were introduced sometime in the late 1970s or else in the 1980s by fanatical extremist sannyasis and their brahmachari followers. But for the readers of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's clear that the bad reviews begin from Srila Prabhupada himself. We assume that Srila Prabhupada is following the purports given by the predecessor acharyas, like his own spiritual master. So this opinion has been coming down for quite some time, long before the 1970s. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that Raghunath Pat was advanced in Krishna consciousness. So what was the need of family life? Avidya karma sangyamya tritiya shaktiri ishyate. Conditioned life means ignorance and hard work. And that hard work especially becomes necessary in the bondage of family life. In family life, so much time is spent in earning money. The whole world gets up in the morning and goes to work, and works till late in the day or night, or else starts work in the night. And sometime after working for 8 or 10 hours or more, they come home to their family. Or sometimes we find that people even go to some foreign country to work very hard. In the Persian Gulf is full of Indians and Bangladeshis who are working for small wages, very difficult conditions, living in labor camps, and doing construction work in a desert climate to send money back to their families. So much hard work becomes one's lot on account of family life. One becomes very busy in working to maintain the family, and then when we get some money, then spending the money. The Shukadeva Goswami says, Nidraya, what is that? Riyate naktam. Vyavavayena chava payaha. Divacharte haya rajan kutumba vadanenava. depicting materialistic family life, he says that people waste their time at night sleeping or having sex. If there's no opportunity for sex, then sleep. Sleeping or sex, and during the day, where is money, where is money, where is money, where is money? Divacharte haya rajan. Kutumba baraneva, or spending money for family affairs. In this way, he says, the life is practically wasted. So, why is all of this necessary? Pumsastriya maitani bhavametam. Because the man is attracted to a woman, woman is attracted to man. And it's not simply on intellectual considerations. The attraction is sex. Attraction is sex. So for sexual attraction, the man and woman get together. And tayor mito hridya grantamahu. When they unite, then there's a tight knot that forms in the heart. Ata griha kshetra sutta apta vittai. And then they need a home, an apartment, some place to be together. And they want some land, a field of activities. And children come on the scene. And relatives are part of the picture. They have to be satisfied. And for all of that, we need money, sufficient money for the house, for the land, to satisfy the relatives, to take care of the children. And one becomes so wrapped up in these things that janasya mohoya mahamaniti, by the influence of illusion, one thinks, I am this body. And this is my wife, these are my children, this is my car, this is my house, this is my bank balance, this is my this is my that. And forgets about spiritual advancement. Forgets about spiritual advancement. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that here's this nice young man, Raghunath Bhatt, the son of a sincere devotee, also Tapan Mishra. And Raghunath Bhatt was already advanced in Krishna consciousness. So when he was advanced in Krishna consciousness, what was the need to get involved in family affairs? There was no need. So he flatly instructed Raghunath Bhatt, don't marry. Not, well, if you like, or let's see, or we can think about it. Don't. Don't do it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had some other plan for him and saw that for him to get involved in family life was simply unnecessary. Those who have no family obligations can spend their full time in spiritual service and spiritual cultivation. So what was the need for Raghunath Bhatt to get involved in the burdensome duties of householder life and the attachments, natural attachments of householder life? So he instructed him, don't marry. And Srila Prabhupada also instructed that marriage is a concession. Again, this is very much out of style these days. We're not supposed to say these things, especially sannyasis should be careful not to revert to the old image. But here Srila Prabhupada flat out says that it's a concession. Better to do without it, but because the man is attracted to a woman, woman is attracted to a man, so these things have to be regulated. Because it's our principle, no illicit sex. The sex life should be controlled. So the civilized arrangement for control in Vedic culture, or practically any human society, is married life. In married life, there's some scope for sex life, for the man to be attracted to his wife, for the wife to be attracted to the husband, to have children and so on. That's all legitimate. That's all accepted according to religious principles. Otherwise, the attraction, willy-nilly attraction of any man for any woman for any man, and then they're getting together in clubs and dormitories and what have you, is the animal, is just animal life. So the human being also has the animal propensities for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But those are to be regulated. As far as possible, all of these things should be minimized. Eating should be controlled, not lots and lots of eating and very opulent eating. Eating should be minimized, sleeping should be minimized, fighting should be minimized, and sex should be minimized. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw that in the case of Raghunath Patta, minimized means minimized to nil. It could be completely dispensed with. There was no need. No need at all. Otherwise, within married life, sex is allowed. And apart from that, sex is just animal life or degradation. So, a concession, Srila Prabhupada says, if we can't do without it, then we should accept it within regulations. But it should be recognized as burdensome. And even then, that acceptance of householder life is also limited. The first thing is that householder life is not an unlimited license for sense gratification or sex life. Just like we get a driver's license. So a driver's license means that you're allowed to drive a car, but it's not a license to do anything. To drive your car at any speed, on any road, on any side. It's not that now you have a license to kill. It's a limited license. The license is actually meant to restrict. Otherwise, we could just sell cars and people could drive them. What is the purpose of the license? It's to restrict. You have to now drive. You're allowed to drive, but you have to drive within the speed limit. You have to pay some money also for the license and taxes and so on. You have to demonstrate a certain level of capability. And if you abuse your license, we can take it away also. If you're found drunk or whatever, too many infractions, then we can take your license away. You lose your license. So the marriage license is also not a license for unrestricted sex. Dharmaha viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi paratarshapa. Krishna says that sex is a representation of him when accepted in a way that's not contrary to dharma, to religious principles. Religious principles means sex should be accepted for having good children. Otherwise, not. Otherwise, it's dharma virud. against principles of dharma. So within householder life also, the sex is to be controlled. And then finally, householder, the license is to be surrendered after 25 years. It's not to be renewed. Sometimes people, after 20 or so on years of marriage, they start again. That's not advisable. But the idea is that as a young man, one may accept married life as a provision for controlling these senses. And after 25 years of married life, one should give up sex life and accept the vanaprastha ashram for renewed detachment. By that detachment, one advances more in spiritual progress. Otherwise, remaining in family life, growing old, and remaining attached to the companionship of the opposite sex and to family, the family circle and homely attachments is described as hitvatma patam grihamandakupam. Atma patam means stopping spiritual progress, and grihamandakupam means the dark well of home life. Antakupa, dark well, means like a hidden well, a blind well. There's some well out in the fields, but it's been neglected or covered over with some grass, vegetation, and so no one knows it's there, and some unwary traveler falls in, and then how will he get out? No one is there. Help, help. There's no help to come. So that's called andhakupa, a blind well. So the householder life of unending attachment is compared to such a blind well. And Prahlad Maharaj advised Hiranyakashipu that hitvatma patam grihamandakupam vanam gato yad tarima shriyeta, that the best thing is to get out of that blind well of family attachment and go to the forest. Vanam gato and yad harima shriyeta, and take shelter of Krishna, the personality of Godhead. In previous ages, the vanaprasthas literally used to go to the forest. We read that Maharaj Prithu, along with his wife Archie, went to the forest and performed tapasya. And many other great souls followed that system. But in the present age, who is prepared to give up living in London and suddenly go to the forest? It's not a reasonable expectation. But there, Prabhupada said the best thing is the Vrindavan forest, Vrindavan. We have arrangements there where people can retire from family life. That was Prabhupada's particular idea about Vrindavan, was that people, respectable people who had finished with their householder life, could retire to Vrindavan and engage in the service of the deity and chanting of the holy name of the Lord, and in this way cultivate Krishna consciousness as the most important duty in life. So from that point of view, the household life is a temporary concession. It's not meant to be permanent at all. In the mature stage, one should cultivate detachment from family life through the Vanaprastha ashram, and if possible, one should accept sannyas for traveling and preaching for the benefit of the world, as Srila Prabhupada did, as he showed by his own example. He said about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas at a young age, and Prabhupada said he gave up the small world of wife and family for the larger world of Krishna and all humanity. I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I think, said that. So that's the idea. This family life is a small world, and one becomes wrapped up in that world. The children and their education and their marriage and or their this and their that, so many things concerning in-laws and finances and home repair and taxes and jobs and recessions and so many things. And that appears to be, there are endless things to do there and there are endless engagements, but it's really a very small world. And one is advised to either just don't turn off the freeway and get off on that ramp that leads to that small world, or find the off-ramp at the appropriate time and go on from householder life, leave householder life behind, because we're going to have to leave it behind anyway. No one can remain eternally in family life. So one is advised voluntarily to cultivate detachment from family affairs and attachment to Krishna. All right, are there some questions? No one. It appears that those who are spiritually advanced don't need family life, and those who are not spiritually advanced are going to have trouble with family life. So then, for whom is it advisable? It's really not advisable. But it's advisable as the alternative to family life, unlicensed family life. Prabhupada, as much as he's speaking, giving negative marketing here for family life, he was even more negative about bachelor daddies. The mixing of men and women without following the regulative principles is most condemned. In family life, Prabhupada says generally a person cannot make much advancement, but if one is serious, then in family life also he'll be very focused on Krishna consciousness and make progress. But for a person involved in illicit affairs, where's the question of spiritual progress? So this is there's a concession here, but it's a concession rather than this, do this. Rather than unrestricted association, you're hungry for that association, all right, then within this arrangement, which is accepted in Vedic culture, not within the uncivilized life. Mm-hmm. Well, let's repeat what you said, that since there's this analogy of driver's licenses and so on, and since most of the citizens of ISKCON are in the Grihastha Ashram or headed toward the Grihastha Ashram, wouldn't it be better to provide systematic training as they do with the motor vehicles department and so on, rather than giving just a sort of negative outlook? Well, yes. Let me extend that analogy a little more, since you extended it. In the modern context, there's more and more emphasis being placed on public transportation. Because... I didn't guarantee that you'd like this analogy, but since we're in the mood of extending analogies, there's more and more emphasis being placed on public education, public transportation, because cars, everyone having his own car, is becoming problematic. The highways are choked, there's so many accidents, there's the high cost of petrol, there's air pollution, there's all sorts of problems that are created because everyone has to have his own car. And you like in India before, if you saw a car, you always saw that there were at least 432 people in each vehicle. Because to run a car is costly. Now India is also becoming advanced, so you see cars moving around with just the driver and then one passenger, and that's just normal. Nobody even thinks about it, whereas previously you filled up the car and then you moved. And of course, the West has been advanced since a long time, so we always just get in our car and drive everywhere. But it's now becoming increasingly problematic, and so governments are encouraging people, take the bus, take the train, take the tube, take advantage of our public transportation. Even governments like Singapore, they tax your car like crazy. They provide wonderful, first-class, super excellent public transportation and tax the hell out of you if you own a car. And they're, although people don't like it, their rationale is, we're just charging you what it actually costs us to provide everything that your car makes necessary. The traffic signals, the road repairs, the police, the whole, the licensing arrangement. That's all of these things come into the real cost of your owning a car, and who's supposed to pay for it? You pay for it. So they, in various ways, governments are encouraging people, think twice about getting that car. And also from the point of view of the owner, it's expensive, there's parking, there's tolls, there's petrol, there's repairs, there's depreciation, you have to replace your car, and so many difficulties. And in an age when money is short, it starts to make sense to think about, well, maybe I need a car? Where do I need to go? Can I just make it on public transportation? Would my life be simpler, in fact, if I didn't have a car? I've never driven a car. I can testify that I've saved myself an awful lot of trouble and expense. I've never worried about anything to do with my car because I never had one. And, you know, you call the airplane people and make a reservation. Would you like to have a rental car, sir? Well, I've never driven. You've never what? It's like unbelievable. But life is possible without an automobile. So we can encourage the idea that life is possible without marriage, that life is possible without sex. It's not out of the question. And in fact, part of the numerical, vast numerical superiority of the Grihastha Ashram in modern ISKCON comes from the idea that somehow brahmacharya life is not tenable, is not a doable, it's not a realistic option. And so then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is not to say that there are, not to deny that there are, of course, a large proportion of people who are going to be householders and who should become educated and responsible householders. So after giving my little extended analogy about public transportation, I will wind up agreeing with you that those who are going to be grihasthas or those who are already grihasthas certainly should learn the rules of the road. They should learn how to live in family life in such a way that they'll be able to make the most progress in Krishna consciousness, that they'll know what the rules are, first of all, know how to follow them, second of all, and know how to mold their life in such a way that that the whole enterprise becomes or continues to be an ashram, a place of spiritual progress, rather than a dark well from which no one can escape. Okay? Yes? Okay, Rupa Vilasparu. Yes. Well, Prabhupada had one proposal. He said, well, there's so many women who need to be married, so some of the men can take more than one wife. he said, they're already spoiled anyway. But that also has its problems, so. I don't remember, but yeah, there are some that didn't. There are some that weren't experimental. We have some of our godbrothers who are from traditional Indian backgrounds where having more than one wife is not such a crazy, wow, just what I always wanted to do. As a hippie, I always dreamed about having five wives or something. Our Vasudev Prabhu from Fiji, who has two very good wives. In that sort of stable context, it has been successful. And of course, within the traditional Indian context for many centuries or millennia. So Vasudev had how many wives? The father of Lord Krishna? 11 wives, and so on. But in the modern United Kingdom, that option may be exceedingly problematic. So no, I haven't thought of any innovative solutions. I'll let you know. Yes. Somebody else. Yes. How does one know, whether you're a man or a woman, how does one know whether one is advanced enough to avoid family life? The direction of the spiritual master is there. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how did Raghunath but know what to do? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu flatly told him, don't marry. So sometimes the spiritual master says, marry. And sometimes he says, don't marry. And sometimes he may say, marry or don't marry, it's up to you. So especially the direction of the spiritual master is there, or the direction of senior devotees. Mm-hmm. The feeling responsibility for marriage for another person in a marriage is unintelligent. If you're married, no, then it's you must. If you're married, you have to feel responsible. If you're not married, then it's sort of it can be a kind of a trap. You know, here's this poor girl and no one's responsible for her. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. So in that way, one may become lured into family life, and we might not consider that sort of attraction to be the sign of the highest grade of intelligence. But if one is married, then certainly one has to be responsible. Two answers. What is the hope when householder life involves so much working expense and so on? One hope is that in the midst of all this, we chant Hare Krishna and associate with devotees and follow the principles of sadhana so that we will, you know, stay, keep our heads above water and make progress even in the grihastha ashram. The other hope is the vanaprastha ashram. The light at the end of the tunnel. By the way, this also fits into the analogy, all this working and so on. These are taxes. This license is heavily taxed. Not only that, but the grihastha, according to the traditional system, has to support not only his family, but the grihasthas have to support the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, and the sannyasis. Very expensive license. Yes, and then yes. Good way of learning is to have your license taken away. If you're reckless. Best way of learning is to take the course and learn how to drive safely and not have to learn the hard way. If you want to take it further, we were driving on the road, where was it, the other day? And just as we must have been like about 5 minutes before us on the opposite side of the road, a car had gone completely belly up, and a helicopter was just leaving with whatever was left of the inhabitant of that car, the people within that car. So, yeah, you can speed and get your license taken away, but you can speed and get in worse trouble than that. So we should be very serious. If people think that I can do anything and everything, and you know, I have my wife and I've got something on the side, and you can seriously crash your life. So it shouldn't be taken lightly. As you mentioned, marriage is a responsibility. The husband is supposed to be the spiritual master of the wife. How responsible does he have to be? Yes. Well, that responsibility of reaching out to others is common to everyone, whether you're a householder or a brahmachari, sannyasi. Everyone can reach out to others and give them the opportunity to be Krishna conscious. It's expected that the brahmacharis and sannyasis will mostly be preaching to householders or people who are not already members of the Krishna consciousness movement. If we only preach to ourselves, we're going to have a pretty insular world. But the householders, naturally in the course of their occupation or in the course of their life, they mix with so many people, so they can take the opportunity to tell them about Krishna. But that's not a very big deal. You know, to pay your taxes and live as a moral citizen, isn't that just sort of assumed? I mean, you can not pay your taxes and be an immoral citizen, but it's assumed that that even a normal standard issue British citizen is going to pay taxes, is going to stop at the traffic lights, is going to do the normal things that are expected of any law-abiding citizen. So that's more or less assumed, I would think, that a Krishna-conscious grihastha is not going to be below that standard. He's not going to be robbing banks for a living or whatever other sort of government cheating schemes we might find. He'll be a law-abiding citizen at minimum. But if that's all he does and says, well, yes, what do you do as devotional service? Well, I set a good example by paying my taxes and stopping at the traffic lights. Really? That's revolutionary. I mean, that's not really all that exciting. Everybody does that. So we should expect that the additional benefit, the people, your neighbors and friends can get the benefit of that kind of association from one another. They're all presumably nice, law-abiding, upstanding citizens. But when they associate with devotees, they should get something more than that. If we don't give them more than that, what are we doing? What's the benefit of being devotees, or what benefit are they getting from associating with devotees if the devotees don't tell them anything about Krishna? Jayadakotahai Kaho Krishna Upadesh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made this available to everyone. This is not the privilege of the brahmacharis and sannyasis that they can tell other people about Krishna. It's for everyone. The grihasthas also, they have ample opportunity to tell people about Krishna. That then you're being law-abiding and so on has value, that this person's law-abiding, upstanding, pays taxes, drives the kids to school every day and chants Hare Krishna and gives me these books and gives me prasadam and invites me to the temple and. Otherwise, there's no particular benefit. Yes, Anirudha Prabhu. Sure. Everyone can preach. Yes, Maji. I'm sorry, it's a little hard to hear you. Not about the salary question in ISKCON. Okay, yes. Okay, good. Okay, let's trace this. Prabhupada said that to be a Shudra is better than to be a materialistic Brahmin. And there was another example before that you gave. Better to be a Sahaja than an impersonalist, because then there's some opportunity for chanting the holy name and being attracted. So the question is about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his apparently callous treatment toward this Ramdas, who had a legitimate determination in the sense that he wanted to merge with the Supreme, which is a spiritual goal. So why was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so callous toward him? And how would Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have behaved toward a materialist? Is that... A materialist who uses the scriptures and deities for sort of as vehicles for material progress. Okay, good question. First of all, it's very hard to second guess or to guess what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might do. We're surprised here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so dismissive or unimpressed, just paid no attention at all to this Ramdas. It's very surprising. We would think that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, well, he wanted to catch the impersonalist, and here was an impersonalist who'd taken the very good step of serving a pure devotee of the Lord. So we might have expected that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have in some way capitalized on that, used that as a way to bring Ramdas further along in devotional service. We might think that. But here we find, surprisingly, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just ignored him. He's an impersonalist. He's putting on a show only of being a Vaishnava. He's chanting and serving, but his goal is something else. Ignored him. What might Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have done with a materialistic devotee? We don't really know. It depends on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his own desire. Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're completely independent. They can do as they like. So he can show mercy to such a materialist, or he can ignore such a materialist entirely. You're just making a show, and you're just, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes said, using the Shalagram Shila as a nutcracker. We really don't know what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would, except sometimes he may be one way and sometimes another. With one materialist, he may be generous. With another, he may be stern. It's very hard to know the mind of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He does as he likes. But here we're given an instructive incident that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't appreciate his underlying impersonal motive. That we're supposed to take from this. But in terms of knowing in any given instance how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu might behave, he can surprise us. Prabhupada also, one time Prabhupada was passing by the home. He was on his morning walk, and way in the distance on the other side of a lake or something was the home of E.L. Hunt, I think it was. H.L. Hunt, okay, thank you. H.L. Hunt, big capitalist, big successful corporate materialist. And some devotee reported, Srila Prabhupada, we tried to go and give him a book, but we couldn't get past the guards. And Prabhupada said, oh, if you'd been allowed in, what would you have said to him? So then devotees made their different proposals. That one said that, oh, sir, you're a very respectable person, and we've come to give you this book because you're obviously a cultured, intelligent person, and we think that you would find this book of interest. And someone else said that, sir, you know, we approach you with all humility, and you're a very great person in society, and please give your attention to this philosophy. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, you should tell him that you're a thief, that you've stolen everything from Krishna. You should give it all back. So we don't exactly know in any given instance what the Lord or his devotee may do. They may surprise us. Is that okay? Okay. Rupa Lasprabhu. Just to follow up on that, because I remember that incident down. You heard that? No. That Rupa Vilas Prabhu was there in Dallas when this incident occurred. And the first thing was that when Prabhupada was told that the man said that he wouldn't see, or he'd arranged that he wouldn't see the devotees, Prabhupada said, so when death comes, will you also say, I won't see you? You'll have no choice. Death will come and do its business.
But regarding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being unpredictable, but one thing I think that we have to say is predictable is they would act for that person's benefit.
Yes. Yes. Ultimately, the Lord and his devotees act for the welfare of everyone. Yes, Maji. Very good. Mm. Very. Yes. Thank you very much. Very good. Yes. Yes, we should, of course, the standard for preaching is quite, Prabhupada was very liberal. If you got this book and you liked it, then tell the next person. If you got this chanting and you're happy chanting, then tell the next person. It doesn't mean that first you have to become the highest Paramahansa. As long as we've, whatever we're getting, Prabhupada said, whatever you learn from me, now distribute to others. So he wasn't restrictive. That don't tell anyone until you become very highly trained. No, from the very beginning. Yes. Hare Krishna. We talk a lot about males and their advancement in sannyas. So for a woman, are there restrictions, impediments? Well, of course, every embodied soul has impediments. We're all dealing with that. As far as socially speaking, sannyas is not an option for women. It's considered unsuitable for the women, but tapasya or austerity is accepted by the women in Krishna consciousness. The Archie, the wife of Prithu Maharaj, accepted along with her husband a path of austere life. Vishnupriya Devi, the wife of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the Lord took sannyas, lived very austerely. She was chanting Hare Krishna. When she finished a round, she would put aside a grain of rice. And at the end of the day, however much rice there was, that's how much she cooked and took as her meal. So, of course, we can't imitate Vishnupriya, but there are many saintly women in Krishna consciousness who set the example of dedicating themselves fully to the service of the Lord, putting aside all consideration of sense gratification. Especially in youthful life, the women are involved in family affairs and family happiness, as their husbands are. But as in the mature age, the husbands are meant for renunciation, the wives are also meant for renunciation of material enjoyment. So they may live at home under the care of their older sons or other relatives, but they live not for enjoyment, but for advancement in spiritual life and for the service of the Lord. Even today in many Indian households, you'll find that the elderly mother is there at home. And what is she doing? She's not busy in all sorts of social affairs. And so she's chanting Harinam and serving the deity, reading books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Very seriously engaged for spiritual progress for the sake of going back home, back to Godhead. And her presence provides spiritual enlightenment for the members of the household. You know, that we're not just going to live as young and you know, we're not going to be the Pepsi generation forever. American advertising, I don't know if they had it here, but you know, young and vibrant and out jogging and having a great time. We're not going to do that forever. We're going to become old. And in our old age, what are we going to do? Dye our hair green and go clubbing? You know, so, excuse me? If we've still got any here, yeah. So no, the life is not meant for sense gratification. Life is meant for spiritual progress. So the austere, mature women in Krishna consciousness set that example and remind the whole family of the real goal of life. Yes, Maji. Hare Krishna. Yeah, good question. In the modern context, these sons don't take care of the mothers, so then where do things go? Who becomes responsible? First thing is that the modern society is misdirected, and our Krishna consciousness movement should attack it. That they're living a wrong way of life. What kind of life is this where you just live for your sense gratification? And when your parents are old, you don't care anyway because you ditched them. You cut your ties with them when you were 18, and you don't care about your parents. You just care about having a good time, and they're kind of a drag because they're so old and slow, and they don't get it. And so we kind of, at best, maybe we arrange to institutionalize them, but that's the most that we'll do. And if we can avoid that, so much the better. That's a really irresponsible, doggish life, and our Krishna consciousness movement should point out these kinds of serious defects in the modern social setup. Then the next thing is, well, what is our social setup? And you know, it's great that we talk about the society out there and how bad it is, but how good are we? So the first thing is that we have to train our sons that life is not meant for sense gratification. That you have responsibilities, and human life is meant for responsibility. So you have to take care of your parents in their old age. In Bhagavatam, it's said that anyone who can take care of older parents and other dependents, but fails to do so, is like a dead body, even though he's breathing. So our own young people need to be trained that this is your responsibility, that your life is not just having a great time, but it's being responsible. So you have to be responsible for your parents, especially the mother and father both, but especially the mother is still more dependent. Then the question is then, well, suppose there's no son or the son is not responsible, so then what happens? In that context, then there may be other relatives, sometimes the father, when was it Dantavakra who was killed by Krishna? Then, Kamsa's daughters were married to who? Dantavakra or some other demon? Anyway, Krishna killed them, so they went back to their father. So that's there, that in the absence of the husband or the sons, then the father may take responsibility, or the elder brother may take responsibility. I think those from Indian backgrounds, you know that someone in the family has to take responsibility. If there's no father, then it's an older brother. If it's not a brother, then it's the cousins. But somebody in the immediate family has to feel responsible. That in our family, she made it, and it's not so limited that she's the mother of these two sons, but she's our mother also. So we have to take, we have to see to her welfare. So that's the extended family concept. The family has to take responsibility. In the absence of family, then it becomes, again, it becomes part of the householder's duty, any householder, that within the householder community, if we see that the elderly ladies are not being taken care of, they need help, support, then as family men, it becomes our responsibility. And that's not unique to Krishna consciousness. Any civilized society, there are widows, there are orphans, there are people who need special help. And it's the duty of the responsible members of the community to see to that. So in our Krishna consciousness movement, that should not be lacking. Yes? Is that okay? Okay. Can we work out the idea, the difference between reality and fiction, or is it all stories? It's all stories. The dividing line between reality and fiction is the Maha Mantra. Where there's Krishna, there's reality, and where there's no Krishna, there's fiction. Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Should we wrap things up here? It's getting to be time. All right. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta bhakta vrinda ki jai. I see you brought that one.